Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which you can visit at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host, Jasper. Kareem Saeed is here on break from his regency at the Royal Helium Academy of Science, and on this episode, we'll be discussing John Carter, the long-awaited big-budget sci-fi extravaganza produced by Disney and directed by Andrew Stanton. Stanton is the winner of two Best Animated Feature Oscars for Finding Nemo and WALL-E, so John Carter is kind of a big change of pace for him, because it's live-action and also because it's terrible.
Sun, then Rasu.
Mercury.
Then Khonsu.
Venus. Then Earth. Us.
That is Jasum. You are on Barsoom, John Carter.
Mars. I'm on Mars.
So, Kareem, there's been a considerable amount of talk in the media in the weeks leading up to John Carter's release about the marketing of this movie and how it hasn't really been very successful at getting across what the movie is about. I guess it's been tracking poorly, and as a result, Disney, the company that produced it, is reportedly bracing for a very huge financial loss. I don't know if you've read any of this stuff, but I was wondering if you knew what the budget for this movie was.
I know that it's very high, somewhere upwards of $200 million.
Yes, it's actually, it's $250 million, which...
Wow.
Is a lot of money, or if you're a big Scorncast fan, I can put that in perspective for you. That's just over three Jack and Jills.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because on the Jack and Jill podcast a few months ago, we discussed the total puzzler that movie cost $80 million. Still trying to wrap my brain around that. At least John Carter looks expensive. Like, it has a lot of lavish CGI creatures and alien worlds on the screen, and it's not just, like, Taylor Kish making faces while another Taylor Kish dressed up as a woman poops on a toilet in the next room.
Although, yeah. That might have made for an interesting couple of sequences.
That would be a good twist. We're getting a little bit off topic. It must be some residual issues with Jack and Jill. We both have.
Maybe. We haven't worked it all out yet.
Do you know Jack and Jill, incidentally, just came out on Blu-ray last week, so don't buy it.
Okay, I'll resist the urge.
Yes. But anyway, this was a long way of setting up this episode's So Kareem question, which is, So Kareem, $250 million price tag. When was your first clue that this movie might not have been worth all that money?
Ooh.
I'm sort of tipping the hat really early, but we both did not like this movie. That's the correct assessment, right?
I loved it.
Oh, okay. When did you know that the money was worth it?
The moment it started.
Yes, of course.
I said, this is what I've been waiting for.
This is
in
the
a
one.
Cinematic experience.
Yeah.
No, I actually was really put off by, like, the bad Civil War era acting at the very beginning that went on for about 15 minutes, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty long prologue that sets everything up. I would not be surprised if it actually went on for longer than 15 minutes.
Yeah. And after that 15 minutes, he's just randomly transported to Mars, and they do that whole, oh, the gravity's weird, and I can somehow float now thing.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that's when I knew that we were in trouble. The prologue of this, set during the, like, 1860s, was serviceable in a, like, stupid big-budget movie sort of way. Like, I wasn't really feeling fatigue yet. I mean, I was, but not, like, I wasn't feeling threatened in the way that I was very soon after that. But, like, so John Carter, who is played by Taylor Kish from Friday Night Lights in this movie, he is a Civil War soldier, ex-Civil War soldier, and I guess he's a prospector after
a
while.
Right, so he's turned his back on both sides of the war, and they hint at some, like, family tragedy that has driven him away from being strongly affiliated with either side of the war, which is kind of a theme that plays out. Well, and he turns into a gold digger, I guess.
Yeah.
In the historic American sense, not the Kanye West sense.
But yeah, he finds a cave where he's looking for gold. It's sort of complicated, but the general idea is that he finds a portal that transports him to, here we go, the magical world of Barsoom, which is actually Mars as we know it. Which, I guess, I'm fine with that.
I will say, though, Barsoom sounds like the name of some European low-class porn magazine. Lonely Frenchmen have to buy issues of Barsooms and put them in opaque black bags as they leave the adult bookstore.
Yeah, my mom was really upset when she found a copy of Barsooms under my mattress as a child. I had a lot of explaining to do. But yeah, he's transported to Barsoom. Immediately, we're thrown into this alien world where there's a lot of proper nouns being thrown around willy-nilly. We'll come back to that in a minute. The thing that I want to stress right away for my moment of clear suckiness in this movie was when he is on this alien planet, Barsoom, and he realizes that he has this power on Barsoom that he doesn't have on Earth, which is he can jump very high and very far distances. And immediately he encounters an alien race known as the Tharks. I can't really think of a good way to describe them without really, like, cementing my nerd cue, but in Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, the Geonosian insect creatures would probably be, like, a good way to describe them. They have multiple arms, they're green. I mean, if you Google Geonosian insect creatures, you will see basically what the Tharks look like. Or you could just Google the Tharks, and then you'll know what the Geonosian insect creatures look like, either way.
A quicker path towards figuring out what the Tharks look like.
That's true. Okay, fine. But yeah, he figures out that he can do this. He encounters this alien race. They don't speak the same language, obviously, because the Tharks speak Barsoomian, I guess.
Tharkian,
yes. I was being very racist just now. But yeah, they speak Tharkian or Tharkies. Taylor Kish, as John Carter, speaks English, Southern English, to be exact, because he's from Virginia.
Right.
Which is a point the movie brings up over and over again, because the aliens think that when saying that he's from Virginia, he is saying that his name is Virginia. So there's this running joke through the whole thing where they keep on calling him Virginia, which never gets old at all, right?
Those classic Martian miscommunications.
So he cannot speak the same language as them, but they're noticing that he can jump very high and very far. The Tharkian or Tharkies word for jump sounds a lot like the word suck.
Yes.
So there are a lot of sequences where they're, like, looking at John Carter with, like, sort of amazement, and they're like, suck.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Which is what I did throughout the entire movie, too.
Well, that's what the movie did, actually, throughout the entire movie. But, yeah, there are definitely, like, long sequences where they're just watching him in awe and being like, suck. Suck, Virginia. So I feel like now is a good time to just give thanks for the internet, for Wikipedia. And other sites where we can look up movie information, because there's no way that we could talk about this movie, I don't think, without reading up on all these different alien races, because like we were saying earlier, this is a movie where proper nouns are used all the time. This movie is based on a book that was written by Edgar Rice Burroughs in 1917. It was called A Princess of Mars. It was the first book in a series. For the record, I have not read this book. You have not read this book as well?
No, I have not.
Would you like to now?
It's next in my queue, sure.
Oh, sure. From Bookflix or Netbooks or whatever. Exactly. Yeah, so, okay. On Barsoom, there are four races of aliens that we know of. We're not really, there could be more. Maybe the books go into more detail. And
there's
four? Yeah, there's, okay, check this out. Here we go.
Okay.
So there's the Zodangans, who are ruled by Sab Than, who is like this evil warlord guy.
Okay.
Then there's Helium, which is ruled by Tardos Mors and his daughter Deja Thoris. And by the way, Tardos Mors is a Jeddak. So, which I think is that means king, right? Like he's like just the king of
Jeddak is a title.
Yeah, he's like royalty. Basically Tardos Mors
lexicon.
Tardos Mors is the Jeddak of Helium. So, that's that. And Deja Thoris is his daughter. Deja Thoris we should single out because she becomes very important in the story. She's played by Lynn Collins. Then there are the Tharks, who were the alien race that we talked about. They're the only ones in all of these that look like aliens would look. Like, everyone else is played by human actors, not CGI creations.
With tattoos on their face.
With tattoos on their face. And they're sort of tinted red, kind of vaguely. I guess to make them look Martian? Maybe because the soil on Mars is red, I guess? Maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah. And then there are the Therns, this sort of like intergalactic messengers of the goddesses.
Yeah, those guys.
They float down and they're like, they basically just exist to kind of fuck shit up. Like, that's their whole modus operandi. They're into chaos. They're basically like the Joker from The Dark Knight. But the leader of the Therns is Matai Shang. And I forgot to mention that the leader of the Tharks is Tars Tarkas.
Tars, is that his name?
Tars Tarkas, yeah. Willem Dafoe does the motion capture. I guess it was motion capture. If it wasn't motion capture, he provides the voice for Tars Tarkas. So it's a lot of things that start...
With his extra two arms to do that.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of words in this movie that start with T's and T-H's. And
Tars Tarkas the Thark.
Yes, who is the enemy of Matai Shang the Thern.
Oh,
yeah, but I mean, they're always referred to in really long expository chunks of dialogue where people use all these proper nouns. And to someone like me and to someone like you who are not familiar with the source material, this is going to be a really confusing 2-hour and 11-minute ride. Right.
Yeah, you should take like your Barsoom dictionary.
Yes. You're going to annoy all the people around you by you're going to keep on turning on your flashlight and trying to figure out what's going on in this movie.
What the hell is a Tars Tarkas?
John Carter ends up getting an animal sidekick, sort of. And I don't know what race this thing is, or if it's like a race, or it's just like a deformed Thark or something. But he names it Woola, or its name is already Woola. I don't really know. It's sort of like a dog, but it kind of looks like a rectal lining with a cartoon face.
Yes. It looks like a Shar Pei that was enlarged. Even though it's this kind of big, glumping creature, it can run super fast.
Yes.
I don't know if it can suck, though.
Yeah, I don't think it ever sucks through the whole movie, actually. It might be the one thing that doesn't. But yeah, Edgar Rice Burroughs, so we mentioned he published this thing in 1917.
This thing.
I guess it's a classic work of literature. It has sort of influenced so many works of science fiction and fantasy fiction that are, you know, happening now. I think obviously the similarities are there for Star Wars. You can see a lot of Avatar. I read Gene Roddenberry was influenced by this for Star Trek. It's far reaching. I guess it was one of the earliest examples of this kind of like saga storytelling.
I think it falls firmly in that genre of like classic sci-fi.
Yeah.
Or classic fantasy sci-fi, I guess. I don't know.
That you're probably vaguely embarrassed to read on a subway because the title is A Princess of Mars.
So, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I know the original title for this was John Carter of Mars, and I think they dropped the of Mars at some point in the making of it.
Mm.
I had to look up a couple of numbers here. NASA was formed in 1958. And had the resources to attempt a Mars exploration a couple years later. And I think there was finally a successful Mars exploration in 1965. I'm not necessarily in the know about like astronomical history and whatnot, but I would presume that in 1917 there was not a whole lot about Mars that we knew about. So I'm just kind of looking at this movie through somebody who's alive now in 2012 and thinking that it's just sort of weird right off the bat how they're like, oh, all this is happening on Mars. I mean, we get narration immediately that's like, there are actual things happening on Mars, like this giant civil war and all these alien races fighting for supremacy. Right. But I mean, we know that that's not happening on Mars. And I guess maybe I'm like a curmudgeon that doesn't have any fun at fantasy movies. But it's weird, right? Like, when they decided to make this, why didn't they just pick, like, a fictional planet? I mean, it would piss off the purists who really like this book. I'm presuming that there are people out there who really like this book and this property, but it just kind of right off the bat, sort of, for me, is like, okay.
Right. It was an interesting choice. I think in one of the articles I read about the marketing for this film, they mentioned that the director is really, really in love with the characters of this book, and he wanted to stay as close to the source material as possible. So I would say there probably is a really strong fan base that would have been upset if they made Barsoom something other than Mars.
Yeah. And also, again, not a scientist. I could be way off base about this, but helium was maybe not as commonplace then as it was now, as all the different uses that we have for it. I would have changed the word helium, because everything else on Barsoom has such a like a crazy name, like Zodanga, which I think is actually what the nerds on the Big Bang Theory say when they're excited. But like helium is so specific, and it just kind of makes everything weird when the characters are getting really roused up to go into battle, and they have lines like, and I'm going to do all these in Deja Thora's voice because I do it really well. Will you stay and fight for helium? And then later on, I think maybe it's her or John Carter who says this, but I'm going to do it in her voice. I would lay down my life for helium. And it's just like, you people must really like party balloons.
Yeah, I was going to say, they could have saved this if they gave them all really high-pitched voices.
Yes, yeah.
I, John Carter!
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm sure that some great fan on YouTube, when this comes out, will do like a dub of the movie with chipmunk voices all through it, and it'll be the best thing ever.
Fuck!
I don't know how I feel about hearing like a childish high voice saying suck over and over again, because that's going to be necessary if that dub is made of this movie.
So it was a very daring movie-making move right there.
Yeah. And John Carter's power of jumping very far and very high, it seems like it would be impressive to read about in a book that was published in 1917 if you were reading this book in 1917. But looking at this now, it's like, jumping? That's all you got? You know how much flying shit we see in fantasy movies today?
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
They should have souped up the superpowers a little bit.
Yeah. I just feel like there's no way to make this a successful, interesting movie without kind of overhauling everything that is from the source material. And that's the thing. We've seen so many things that this inspired. We've seen Star Wars movies. We've seen Avatar. That this doesn't seem novel. And that kind of sucks, since it's, I guess, the source material that started the whole, like, science fiction genre. But
it's pretty ironic, right? Because everything is a cliche, but actually, this was the first story to do all of these things.
Sure, but I still feel like on some level, they could have made a good movie out of this somehow, because, you know, look at how many superhero movies we get nowadays. Like, it's essentially all the same thing, but there are little twists and turns, and there are little character things, and, you know, little running themes throughout these stories that make them different and make them good. Like, I'm a big superhero movie fan, and I generally like superhero movies, so I just feel like there could have been a way to get this story, even though we've seen, you know, bits and pieces of it in other things.
Makes sense.
It could have been better than it was, for sure. We should talk about Deja Thoris, because she has made a machine that harnesses the power of the Ninth Ray.
Right, Deja Thoris of the Helium.
Yeah, of Helium, yes. Yeah. The Ninth Ray is something that's very important. It's just as arbitrary as everything else in this movie.
Yeah.
I think it has something to do with returning the oceans to Mars, maybe?
Yes, because that's something that they mention. It's like a huge drought on Mars, and so instead of sea ships, they have airships.
Well, I feel like Zodanga is just a kind of floating city. It's sort of like Jabba the Hutt's sail barge. I'm really mining the Star Wars references here, but it's sort of like Jabba the Hutt's sail barge, but times like 1,000. It's just, I get the feeling that that's just like a giant floating city. And Sab Fan, what he does is he flies around in his giant city and conquers all the little places on Barsoom. Maybe. I don't know. But he's got the power of the Ninth Ray because the Thern, Matai Shang, gave him this, like, arm piece that, like, blasts people, and I think that's what the Ninth Ray was. I'm not 100% clear.
I think you're right.
This movie is very simple in its story, but the problem is, like, so many proper nouns, I keep on coming back to proper nouns, so many proper nouns are thrown around in this movie that it became, like, a thing where I didn't even care what was being said. It all sounded Greek to me. Just to give you an example, Deja Thoris, like we were talking about, she's made this machine that harnesses this power of the Ninth Ray. But as she's giving a demonstration of it to Jeddak Tardos Mors, who is her father, and all the other Helium dignitaries, one of the Therns in disguise sabotages her machine. So she's sad about that, I guess. And then, later on in the movie, she's with John Carter, and they find, I guess, the power source of the Ninth Ray on the River Iss? Is that? I mean, I don't even, but so I have, I wrote down this quote that she says where she's like, and this just gives you an idea of the kind of dialogue you're going to get in this movie. She's like, nine rays, the Ninth Ray is real. It can't be harnessed. Do you see? This entire structure runs on Ninth Ray isolates. The Iss is such power, and somehow Zodanga has it. The Therns, they must be real. And I was like, yeah.
There were a couple of scenes, a couple of pieces of dialogue that were just so completely filled with this made-up language that it really made you question why it was in the movie at all.
Right. Here's a question for you, because in my reading about the story and the background of this online, a couple people who were fans of the book refer to the people of Helium and the people of Zodanga as humans. Were they supposed to be humans?
They were distinctly Martians, I thought.
They had, like, crazy tattoos on them, I guess.
Face tattoos. I kind of got the impression that those were more, like, stripes, that they weren't really tattoos.
Yeah, I guess so.
Decorative. I thought that that was part of their skin or something.
I was generally a little bit confused about that because in order to communicate with the Tharks, John Carter has to drink this soup. It's like a water with a Martian bouillon cube in it. I don't know. It's, I think it's the voice of Barsoom is what they call it, or the milk of Barsoom or something. But I guess he only needed that to understand the Tharks because all the other Martian races were speaking English from the beginning. And I don't know why they just made the Tharks speak a different language than English when everyone else was speaking English at the outset of this movie.
Do we hear the other species on Barsoom speak before John Carter encounters them?
Yeah, because the prologue of the movie, the very first scene in the film, is actually, bear with me, folks, the Thern Matai Shang giving the ninth ray bracelet thing to Sabthan on Zodanga.
Wow. Could you repeat that?
No, I can't. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah, and they're definitely speaking English to each other. And, like, all the other races in this movie, beside the Tharks, are... Yeah. Everything I say has a question mark after it, are played by human-like actors. I think.
Well, I'll tell you what, those Tharks, they better learn how to speak English, or they can get the hell off of Barsoom, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I guess there's some strange race things going on here also. Isn't everyone pretty much white, basically? Well, I mean, they're red. Yeah. But
everybody except for the Tharks, and they're green.
Yeah.
Grayish green.
The Thark society, were they supposed to be, like, savage or wizened? Because initially in the movie, there's a scene where there are all these Thark hatchlings, and the ones that don't hatch, they, like, brutally murder. They just, like, shoot up the eggs. And then they take all the surviving infants back with them to their Thark society or whatever, their city. It shows them dumping all these infants out, like, on the ground. And all the women in the society are going crazy. They're like, ooh, babies. And they all, like, grab a baby. And then one of them is sad that she's, like, she's one of the weaker female Tharks, I guess. So she doesn't get there in time to get a baby. So the main Thark, whose name is Tars Tarkus... gives her John Carter as a baby.
I don't know if we were supposed to distinctly think of them as bad. Their culture is different and strange and foreign. I mean, so John Carter comes from Civil War era United States, Virginia. And so the Tharks are clearly supposed to be this Native American, you know, parallel.
Yeah.
Even though I think the guy who runs Zodanga...
The guy who runs Zodanga is Sabthan.
Sabthan.
It's really embarrassing for you right now.
I know. I'm so... Oh, God. Sabthan of Zodarka.
Zodanga.
Of Zodanga.
Gosh.
This is impossible.
It really is. Like, it's just... It's ridiculous. And I kept thinking...
And I have to go pick up, like, Rosetta Stone Barsoom.
I kept thinking, like, people dump on George Lucas for writing Star Wars, but there's something to be said for, like, all the hundreds... I mean, this movie works in, what, like, four alien species? And in the Star Wars universe, there are hundreds of different aliens that he's created. And they're not introduced in these elaborate ways and referred to. They're just kind of there. Like, you see them in the frame, and they exist, and that's fine. And some of them even have, like, big parts in the Star Wars saga. And all I could think of was, like, watching Empire Strikes Back. And if it was sort of like the scene where Darth Vader is talking to the bounty hunters, but if it was a John Carter universe, they would have been introduced one by one. They would have been like, this is Boba Fett, clone and Mandalorian warrior. Now we have Bossk, Trando-Dash pilot of the Houndstooth, and Monarch in the Quotal system. Next is IG-88, an assassin droid manufactured by Holowan Laboratories. Like, wow.
Can I just say I am so impressed?
Thank you. By my nerditude.
That was very impressive.
And, like... The storytelling in this is just kind of sloppy, right? I kind of want to single out, at one point, John Carter is attacked by this tribe of villainous Tharks, I think, who are either under the command of Sabthan or Matai Shang. I don't remember because why would I? And he's overcome and he wakes up in a jail in Zodanga. And one of the generals from Helium busts him out and he's able to share a romantic moment with Deja Thoris. And then he's tricked by Matai Shang, who's in disguise as a Helium noblewoman because the Therns are tricksters who can magically transform into other people. I don't remember if we brought that up yet. And he's re-imprisoned. So then Matai Shang takes him out of jail, right? And he guides him through Zodanga to view Sabthan and Deja Thoris' wedding procession. And that dog that looks like an anal cavity surprises them and then it frees John Carter. And then Carter steals one of those speeder bikes from the Return of the Jedi and he flies away. And then he decides to go to a city of Tharks to rally their army to help him attack Zodanga and free Deja Thoris. But he finds out that Sabthan already took over this Thark city, so he's imprisoned again. So I don't know if you were counting, but that's three imprisonments, like boom, boom, boom.
my head is spinning from that synopsis.
I mean, my head is spinning from just saying that, because that was a lot of proper nouns. Really hate proper nouns.
I am super impressed.
Thank you. No, I appreciate problem. It. So, like, did anything in this movie work for you at all?
No.
Well, I kind of like the scene where John Carter had to fight the white apes of Barsoom. That was kind of cool, right? I mean, I guess just in terms of the variety, we were actually looking at creatures, right? I mean, like, we were looking at things that we hadn't seen before. And this movie's palette is so samey-same all through it.
I can't even say that the film was visually stunning, because it wasn't.
No, it's
it
really
not.
It was
all just very desert, beige.
I was just happy to see some giant white apes with, like, four arms come in and fuck some shit up.
Yeah, they were cool, but I think I've seen bigger on-screen monsters that were more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it reminded me of the Rancor in Return of the Jedi, the thing that's under Jabba the Hutt's, like, palace that Luke Skywalker fights, which, again, is probably something that George Lucas cribbed from Edgar Rice Burroughs, but, I mean, I'm sorry, but George Lucas did it better.
Right, right.
But I don't really have too much nice to say about this movie. It's like one of those movies that's visually impressive without being visually impressive. Like, you're looking at the movie and you're like, yeah, a lot of money went into this. And you're getting a lot of red dirt, a lot of alien creatures. The Tharks all look the same to me. In fact, there's a scene where John Carter is walking with a Thark to go to, like, a holy place to look at some document or some engraving or something like that. And they walk by, like, a dark, shadowy area. And another Thark sort of steps out of the shadows. And the music does this sinister, like, oh, they're being watched by this Thark. And I was like, oh, I don't know who that is. Like, was I supposed to know who that was? It's a green alien that looks all like other green aliens. Maybe that makes me racist, but...
Yeah, I mean, what are you trying to say? All the green aliens look the same.
They all look the same to me.
There was a little bit of Thark variability. There was the one Thark who kept challenging Thad Tharkus.
You mean the one that was voiced by Thomas Hayden Church?
Yeah, he was a little bit beefier and kind of had, like, broken tusks, because they all had tusks.
Yeah, right? He had one tusk that was broken off, I think.
Right. So, I mean, you know, there was a little bit of variability there, but not a whole bunch.
He wasn't, like, a significant enough character to, like, acknowledge.
Right, right. It For the most part, all those Tharks look the same.
You're just as horrible as I am.
I'm just sick of these Tharks.
Well, but I mean, in my own defense, I would say, like, all the Zodangans look the same. All the people of Helium look the same. Like, I miss that sort of Star Wars universe where you're like, oh, that's such a distinct, weird creation. And that's totally weird, that thing over there. Like, here you get a bunch of aliens that are green, and you get a bunch of humans that look like they spent too long in the tanning bed at Hollywood Tans, and they got some henna because henna is coming back.
Yeah, it's hot right now.
It's so hot right now.
The Helamites and the Zodangans are the same, right? I mean, are they they're the same species?
Yeah.
So we just meant to understand that they're kind of like different countries or something like that?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. It's something that I don't think the movie really touches on, actually.
But the Therns, that's a totally different species.
The Tharks?
Well, the Tharks also.
Well, the Therns are the ones that are from the goddess.
Right, so they're kind of these celestial deity-type creature things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Different than the Zodangans and the Helamites, who are probably the same species.
Yeah. The Therns wear shower curtains.
They do, and they shave their heads.
So, do you want to grade John Carter?
John Carter gets a D. Gets a D plus.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I agree across the table. It's a D plus kind of movie. If they make a sequel, and I really don't think they're going to be able to, because that just seems so laughable, they're going to have to rethink this whole strategy. I think they should go for National Lampoon's Barsoom Academy. I'm thinking for the poster, Deja Thoris could be, like, on there, coyly touching her pinky to her mouth, and the double O's in Barsoom would be printed over her gigantic pendulous boobies.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, the tagline would be something like, "Fighting for Helium isn't the only thing getting them high." And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. As always, you can check out PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, where you can leave us comments, subscribe to our posts, and follow us on Twitter. And you can also email us at scornpop@gmail.com.
Now, let us never speak of Jeddaks, Tharks, or things that run on ninth ray isolates ever again.
Okay.
Barsoom.
What?
Huh?
What did you say?
Barsoom. Oh. Barsoom.
Wow, that angel dust is really kicking in.